All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guiding Lights. Pardon me while I do a little bit of business here. This is just the easiest way to do it with my schedule today. So, Cheryl, I looked at the draft posts for Anne's first recorded teaching and for Jacqueline's first recorded teaching. The only thing that I would like to see different is in the post title, I would like a distinct different title each week. I don't know if Anne gave you a title for today's teaching. That way, people can kind of get an idea. Yeah, that way people can kind of get an idea about what the content of the teaching is. But I thought everything else about the posts looked great. So thank you. And if the title gets too long, then I'll help you adjust the title afterwards. But let's start with that and see what we get. All right, so with that said, I'm going to play a song before we begin looking at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. Now, some of you maybe were here in the last 2 weeks. Some of you probably weren't. But the last 2 weeks of this particular session with Ramana Maharshi got just about as deep as truth teachings can get. We were looking at the fact that the fully enlightened master has no awareness of a self, no awareness of a world. We also looked at the fact that it is consciousness itself that creates the world, not humans. Humans tend to think, you know, when we study truth teachings, we think that, you know, humans are creating the world. But it actually isn't humans. In fact, we talked last week about how, you know, humans could annihilate themselves and cease to exist. And yet consciousness is still here, you know, as insects, as birds, as snakes, as trees. And consciousness would continue to manifest the world through consciousness. So pretty deep teachings that we looked at in the last couple of weeks. The reason I'm saying that is because it's those deep, deep teachings that have led to the song that I've selected. The song that I've selected is a Beatles song, but it's called The Fool on the Hill. And of course, the fully enlightened master is the fool on the hill. So here we go.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down. And the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Along the way, head in a cloud, the man of a thousand voices talking perfectly loud. But nobody ever hears him or the sound he appears to make. He never seems to notice, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes of his head see the world spinning round. Thank you. see the world spinning round.
Beautiful. It's actually helpful to me. I'm not going to go into any details, but there was a big blow up about 20 minutes ago here that I need to manage. And it's not a minor blow up, it's a big blow up. And I'm not quite sure how I will resolve things. And it's interesting to listen to that song about just watching the world go round and round and round, because, you know, this is something that could potentially affect other people and upset other people. And so that perspective of just watching the world go round and round, you know, obviously I will do what I can do to attempt to manage this, but it's one of those things that could be outside of anything I can do. So we'll see what happens and watch the world go round and round and round. And, you know, it is what it is, right? And I'm not going to go into any details right now because I don't want to panic anyone. So I'm just going to keep it to myself for now. Yeah. After it's worked out or not worked out, then I will let people know. Well, Jacqueline, I will be happy to tell you later in our meeting, but everyone else will just need to wait. So let's go to the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. I'm on page 32, number 8. What is pure mind? And what is impure mind? When the indefinable power of Brahman separates itself from Brahman and, in union with the reflection of consciousness, assumes various forms, it is called impure mind. When it becomes free from the reflection of consciousness, through discrimination, it is called the pure mind. Its state of union with the Brahman is its apprehension of Brahman. The energy which is accompanied by the reflection of consciousness is called the impure mind. And its state of separation from Brahman is its non-apprehension of Brahman. Okay, so you guys got that? If you do, you're way more advanced than I am. Yeah, so what we're going to do is slow way down and look at this a piece at a time. And maybe, you know, at the end of the hour, we'll get it. All right? So let's, you know, I always say, I'm sure you've heard me say this before, Ramana Maharshi must have been just an intellectual. And it's funny because they say he was just average as a school student, you know, just average. And it was probably just lack of interest, you know, because he appears to be incredibly smart. So let's start at the beginning. The question I understand, the question is easy to get. The question is easy. What is pure mind and what is impure mind? Okay, that I can understand. Everybody's got the question, right? So let's look at the answer a little more slowly. When the indefinable power of Brahman separates itself from Brahman and in union with the reflection of consciousness assumes various forms, it is called impure mind. Okay, well, I know that Brahman is God, right? I'm going to look up in the dictionary, though. Okay, this is what I suspected. Brahman is God. But remember, if you all follow my teachings at all, you know that I teach about the four principles of God. So when you just say Brahman is God, you really haven't defined Brahman very well. You know, is Brahman the first principle of God, the second principle of God, or the third principle of God? And in order to fully understand this answer, we have to be more specific about what Brahman points to, at least when Ramana Maharshi is referring to Brahman. Now, what I suspected from reading the answer about Brahman separating from Brahman, I suspected that this was talking about, I don't know what you would want to call it, the birth of the second principle of God, or the evolution into the second principle of God, right? Where something kind of, and again, separate here is purely a symbol, because there's no such thing as a separation, but where, you know, kind of like a part of God separated off from God and made something different. Right, we're all familiar with that idea, that a part of God separated off from God and made something different. And so I looked up in the glossary in the back of the book, Brahman, to find out if I could find out more specifically what Brahman is. And when I look up Brahman in the back, it says the universal self, the absolute. The universal self, the absolute. So let me tell the story in this way. So we begin with the first principle of God, which I call life awareness. Life awareness has obviously awareness, but the interesting thing about the first principle of God is that it has no subject-object awareness, or it has no awareness of. And in fact, we've seen both through the Ramana Maharshi teachings and the Nisargadatta teachings that I do on Wednesday evening, we've seen that masters often point to deep sleep as an example of the first principle of God. Because when you're in deep, dreamless sleep, you're not aware of, right? You're not aware of. Yet there's still awareness. Because again, if I was to come into the room and call your name, or if the alarm clock was to go off, or if there was to be a loud, out-of-place noise, you would awaken. If there had been no awareness, then those things wouldn't awaken you, right? So there is still awareness that is active, but it's not aware of when you're in deep sleep. You're not aware of yourself even, right? You're not aware of yourself even when you're in deep sleep. So the first principle of God is often likened to deep sleep, in that it's potent life, pure awareness, but no awareness of. And so when he talks about when the indefinable power of Brahman separates itself from Brahman, he's talking about then when that first, you know, that first split, or that first step away from the absolute occurred, which isn't actually a split, isn't actually a separation, but, you know, these are just words that are used in order to try and describe this evolution of God, this evolution of, you know, it's helpful to think of God as nature, because in effect, God is nature. It's intelligence, life, awareness, nature. And so nature began to evolve, right? Absolute nature began to evolve. And absolute nature with pure awareness, but no awareness of, somehow the intelligence that is in that absolute nature began to evolve into something that could be aware of. Right? And we call that, I call that consciousness. So that just again, so that we can be using different terms for different things. Some people don't use the same terms as me, so you got to be careful, because somebody else may call the first principle of God consciousness and the second principle of God awareness. You know, it gets very confusing. But I call the first principle of God awareness and the second principle of God consciousness. So in beginning to describe what impure mind is, Ramana Maharshi is saying, when Brahman began to separate from itself, or when the first principle of God began to, I don't know how to say this, because none of these words are true, so please pardon the words. Don't take them too literally. I'm going to say when a portion of God, but how can you have a portion of God, right? But when a portion of that first principle of God kind of split off from the original absolute, and formed into consciousness, formed into the first subject, the first sense of I, even long before the word I, you know, but the first sense of self, and the ability now for subject-object awareness. You have to have a subject before you can have subject-object awareness. You have to have a subject before you can have aware of. There has to be someone to be aware, right, before you can be aware of. So when this portion of God began to split off from absolute God and formed into a subject, that was the first step into impure mind. And although I haven't use this term in a long time. I have used the term before to refer to consciousness as divine ego. Ego meaning sense of self. It's not wrong mind at this point, and it's actually still a sense of oneness at this point, but it's the first sense of self. When the indefinable power of Brahman separates itself from Brahman, okay, and in union with the reflection of consciousness assumes various forms. So now we're bringing the third principle of God into it. Again, the first principle of God is pure awareness. The second principle of God is consciousness, which is the first subject. And it gives us the potential for something to be aware of. It gives us the potential for an object. Then what evolved next is the third principle of God, which I call the creative principle or divine law. And it's through divine law that that what we call creation, you know, manifestation begins to occur. And it's very interesting, you know, it's very interesting because the only way that I know, based on my internal knowledge of how divine law works, the only way that I know to really express how divine law works is it's almost like the witnessing principle itself, through its witnessing, automatically creates. It's like an interaction of the witnessing with the witnessed, right? Very basic level, if we step away from God for a moment and step to the human as an example. You know, when thoughts occur in the mind, like I told you guys, I had a big blow up about 20 minutes before taking the mic. Right? Something big happened. And obviously I'm going to have to manage this. I mean, it's absolutely going to require my attention. However, there's the type of thoughts that are, okay, this has happened. You know, what are some possible things that we can do? Who can I work with? Right? These things are very practical. And then, you know, there could be all these fear thoughts, you know, like, oh my gosh, you know, all this imagination. What if this happens? And then this happens. And then this happens. And what if this and this and this, right? It's like two different ways to respond to this, either the practical way or the impractical way. But if I give my attention to the impractical way, to whatever fear thoughts could arise around this situation, regardless of what may happen in form, I'm going to create feelings within myself. I'm going to be scared. I'm going to be, you know, maybe feeling unworthy, maybe feeling guilty, maybe who knows what all it would create. So when I give my attention to these impractical thoughts, these wrong-minded thoughts around this situation, something is automatically created at least an emotion in me, right? So it's really just through my witnessing, you know, witnessing with belief, but my witnessing of the thoughts that arise that creates the emotion. Are you following me on that? So let's take that to a divine level then. Now let's move away from the human back to the divine. So as consciousness witnesses, creation happens in the same way. And that's how the entire manifest world is created. And as we saw last week, when we say consciousness, we don't mean specifically humans. Humans are obviously a part of that, and all of our witnessing and believing is a part of that. But again, humans could be annihilated, and consciousness is still here through the rest of creation, and it continues its witnessing. You know, the Jamie, my dog, witnesses, right? You know, the insects in their own way witness. They have a different way of witnessing, but they witness. So it's consciousness itself witnessing that creates. All right, so let's listen to this sentence again when we're talking about impure mind. When the indefinable power of Brahman separates itself from Brahman and in union with the reflection of consciousness. See, the reflection would be that which is being witnessed. So in union with what is being witnessed assumes various forms. It is called the impure mind. So when consciousness separates off from awareness and then begins witnessing its own reflection, and manifestation occurs with all of the various forms, that's impure mind. Now that's a much higher definition of impure mind than many people might have guessed. For example, many people might have guessed that impure mind is something like attack thoughts, fear thoughts, guilt thoughts, right? And those certainly spawn off of this more divine impure mind that Ramana Maharshi is talking about. But he's really talking about mind at the divine level rather than mind at the individual level. He's not talking about your individual impure thoughts versus your individual pure thoughts. He's looking at mind at the level of God. An impure mind is everything below, I'm going to have to use the word below, the absolute. Cheryl says, what? You want me to just repeat all of that? These are high, high, high spiritual teachings. No doubt about it. Let me take a drink. So let me just repeat that. To the ability that I can. Yeah, Cheryl says, please repeat the last part, but it's hard for me to repeat the last part by itself. Let me start again. We'll just repeat this. So we have the first principle of God, pure awareness, but it's not aware of anything. It's like deep sleep. A portion of, or maybe it's better to say within that. I think I like these words better. Okay. I'm going to use different words because I like them better. Within that, within pure awareness. Oh, I think Rama is smiling at me too. I think he likes these words better too. Okay. So within pure awareness, there begins to evolve consciousness, a subject, a witnessing principle, we'll call it. I think that's a good word. A witnessing principle begins to evolve because in the first principle of God, there's no witness. There's awareness without a witness. And the second principle of God, a witnessing principle, begins to evolve. But there's still nothing to witness, really, other than itself. The witnessing principle could witness itself, but there's nothing else. So the next thing that begins to evolve is the creative principle. And the creative principle is interesting because the way it works is simply through witnessing. As the witnessing principle, hold on, you guys just disappeared for me, so let me get you back. Okay, as the witnessing principle witnesses itself, another evolution begins, which is a creative principle, manifestation, things to begin to form. In fact, we could say that it's the witnessing of itself that created the Big Bang, the first element of creation, right? So, and then, of course, as the witness continues to witness the reflection of itself, which is creation, additional creating happens through the creative principle. And as this additional creation continues to evolve, right, evolution happens, you know, planets are born, stars are born, take one planet called Earth, evolution begins to happen there from single-celled animals to fish, to land animals, to humans, right? Evolution is continuing to happen through witnessing. It starts off with consciousness witnessing itself. That begins to evolve into the Big Bang, and this reflection then continues to be witnessed, and now evolution at the level of manifestation is occurring as the witnessing continues, and the witnessing continues, and evolution and manifestation continues, and you get to the point where you have multiple forms, right? And of course, evolution is still continuing. Witnessing is still continuing. It hasn't stopped. So, Ramana Maharshi is defining impure mind as everything beginning with that initial evolution. So pure mind, and that'll be the next sentence, pure mind is the absolute, the first principle of God alone. The second, third, and fourth principles of God, as I term them, are being called impure mind. You got that, Cheryl? Did that make more sense that said that way? Yeah. When I teach this, you know, I've never used the word impure mind, but I do say that the first and second and third principles of God are all unreal. Only the first principle of God is real. And in fact, if we look at the definition of the word pure, pure is not mixed, right? Not mixed. So the only level of God that is not mixed or is pure is the first principle of God. Right? It also means not joined. Right? That's another definition. Free of any contamination. But the only principle of God, if you look at the first, the second, the third, and the fourth principle of God, the only principle of God that is pure is the first principle of God. And that's basically what Ramana Maharshi is saying here. So it's a non-judgmental statement. Impure doesn't mean evil or bad. It just means it's something different than the original essence. There we go. It's kind of like, you know, it's different. You know? And that's what NTI basically says. And of course, NTI is just a story. But if you look at NTI Romans 2, it basically says that the first idea was something like, you know, what if we could make something different? Right. Yeah, the first principle of God is awareness. I actually call it life awareness. Like that. Life awareness is the first principle of God. The second principle of God we'll call today subject. consciousness. Oops, I hit enter before I wanted to. Let me try that again. Subject. Consciousness. That's the second principle of God. Or I called it a while ago also the witnessing principle. That's another good term for it, the witnessing principle. The third principle of God is the creative principle, which occurs through witnessing. And then the fourth principle of God is manifestation, right? And only that first principle of God, life awareness, is considered pure. Subject consciousness, or the witnessing principle, the creative principle, and manifestation are impure. Because you could say there's something other than pure life awareness. So, let's read this answer again. We might have most of it here. We're not even halfway through the hour. Or we are halfway through the hour. So, what is pure mind and what is impure mind? When the indefinable power of Brahman separates itself from Brahman, so the second principle of God separates itself from the first principle of God, and in union with the reflection of consciousness, in union with the third principle of God, assumes various forms, creates manifestation, it is called impure mind. Right? So we've got that first sentence. Yahoo! We understand the first sentence. Everybody got that? When the indefinable power of Brahman separates itself from Brahman, and in union with the reflection of consciousness assumes various forms, it is called impure mind. When it becomes free from the reflection of consciousness through discrimination, it is called the pure mind. All right. I believe I know what discrimination means, but let's look it up anyway. Oh, no. Hold on one second. I just realized I got to plug in my computer. Or I might, my battery might die and I might just pop away right in the middle of the teaching. You guys would think it was the rapture that I got called up or something. All right, discrimination. Okay, discrimination is, are you ready? There's more than one definition, but this is the definition that applies here. Recognition and understanding of the difference between one thing and another. Recognition and understanding of the difference between one thing and another. So what Ramana Maharshi is saying is when we begin to practice discrimination between what is pure mind and what is impure mind, through the process of discrimination, it's like reverse evolution. It's still a type of witnessing, but it's like reverse evolution. Through the process of discrimination, we reawaken to the absolute, and that is pure mind. So the way that starts, let's start at the individual level. And you know, it's funny because some of these practices we think are really advanced practices, but when you look at them from Ramana Maharshi's point of view, some of the practices that we're engaged in are actually infantile. You know, if we start at the beginning, where A Course in Miracles is, and A Course in Miracles tells us that it's the beginning, you know, A Course in Miracles is teaching us to discriminate between, for example, our attack thoughts and our thoughts of love. That's only the very, very beginning level of discrimination. Discriminating between fear and love, between ego and Holy Spirit, between wrong mind and right mind. That's the very, very beginning of the Yellow Brick Road. At some point, though, through that practice of discrimination, the mind is more pure than it was when you started, right? It's not pure yet, but it's more pure. And as the mind becomes more pure, you're ready for the next level of discrimination, which we also practice here at Awakening Together, but it's a more advanced level of discrimination. The next level of discrimination is discerning between the witness and the objects. And the reason that's a more advanced level, when you're discriminating at the level of A Course in Miracles, you're discriminating between right-minded thoughts and wrong-minded thoughts, but you're still looking at thoughts. When you begin to discriminate the difference between the witness and the objects, you're seeing that all thought is not you. The body is not you. The emotions are not you. You are just the I Am Presence. Right? So it's a more advanced level of discrimination. And through this more advanced level of discrimination, people have what they call an awakening, where they awaken to consciousness. And when they awaken to consciousness, they begin to experience what is called oneness. Because prior to the awakening to consciousness, you know, there was a me and a you. There was a me and that cup over there, right? Once you awaken to consciousness, awaken to the I Am Presence, everything is consciousness. And so there's no longer differences. There's only one. However, remember, Ramana Maharshi defined consciousness as part of the impure mind. It's not yet pure. It's completely right-minded. We don't want to confuse the word impure with wrong mind. But it's not the absolute yet. It's still one step away from the absolute. And so what begins to happen then, once you awaken to consciousness, is you begin to, based on, of course, this I don't know for a fact, because as you guys know, I'm now talking beyond my own experience, but based on, the masters that I have read, you begin to be absorbed temporarily into pure awareness, no awareness of. The Hindus call it samadhi. 2 weeks ago, when I was reading from Bernadette Roberts during this time period, she called it ecstasy. Michael Langford calls it awareness being aware of awareness and nothing else. Right? He's actually, when he's really, you know, we're practicing awareness, watching awareness at our level of not having awakened to consciousness yet. But if you really pay attention to his words, he was already awake to consciousness, and he was practicing awareness, watching awareness at the next level. Awareness being aware of awareness and nothing else, which most of us just aren't capable of yet. We haven't awakened that far yet. So once you awaken to consciousness, you start having experiences, I'll call them, of meditation, where there's no world, no body, right? No self. And you start being in that. I don't know if you could call that witnessing. You start being in that. And as you be in that more and more, eventually an awakening happens where you awaken beyond consciousness back to the first principle of God, pure awareness, no awareness of. And this is why the masters say, as well as A Course in Miracles says, at this point, there is no perception. There's no world. There's no self. It's awakening back to the first principle of God. Right? So these are things that we can't imagine with our puny little minds. But the teaching is highly consistent among different masters that come from different times, different religious or non-religious backgrounds. To put it in A Course in Miracles language, for those of you who feel most comfortable with A Course in Miracles, First, you awaken from the ego to true perception, which is only the right mind, according to A Course in Miracles. What you see through true perception is the real world, according to A Course in Miracles. But even A Course in Miracles tells you that the real world is still a dream. That's the same as Ramana Maharshi saying it's still impure mind. It's not reality yet. And then, from the real world, eventually there's an awakening to heaven. And in heaven, there is no perception. That's the way A Course in Miracles tells this same story. It's a very consistent description of awakening. Many of the teachers that are, quote, awake, that we listen to in the world today, are really only awake to consciousness. They have not yet awakened to the Absolute. Some of them aren't even aware of the Absolute. You know, the teachings that we have here are phenomenal because we're becoming aware of something that some of the teachers aren't even aware of. Let's see. Yeah, and Cheryl is saying, my understanding of heaven is a state of being, so to speak. I would say from everything that I've read from trusted masters like Bernadette Roberts and Ramana Maharshi and Nisargadatta is heaven, as the Course calls it, is something we can't even begin to imagine. Bernadette Roberts calls it a new dimension entirely. It's completely, it cannot be referenced from our point of view, is what we're told. And I trust that, which means I cease to try and imagine what it is. You know, it cannot be referenced from our point of view. Humans cannot understand it, is the way Michael Langford says it, right? Humans cannot understand it. So I trust that. And instead of attempting to understand what it is, I merely attempt to realize it. Attempt to awaken to it. And so what that means is, those of us who are genuine about awakening, it does mean that we are awakening into an unknown. Awakening into something that is completely different from anything that we've ever known. And to it also leaving everything we've ever known in our own way. And this is why many people who have awakened describe extreme fear in that process of making that awakening trip, that trip across the threshold, right? So I kind of digressed a little bit, but it's helpful. So what Ramana Maharshi is saying is that through this process of discrimination, which I'll repeat the stages of discrimination again, and Dove typed in discernment. Discernment would be the word that I would more likely use. But Ramana Maharshi is using the word discrimination, so we'll go with that. Through this process of discrimination, ongoing and increasing levels of discrimination, we eventually reawaken to pure mind. So again, the beginner level, although it doesn't always feel like a beginning level, it feels tough when you're learning to do it. But the beginning level, which is what A Course in Miracles teaches, the beginning level of discrimination is discriminating between the wrong mind and the right mind. Discriminating between attack thoughts and guilt and fear and love, trust, openness. Right? Discriminating between resistance and acceptance. And what we learn to do in that first level of discrimination is to disregard, not repress, but disregard as having no meaning, disregard the wrong mind and only pay attention to the right mind. And what happens through this is an initial purification. And you could say that through this initial purification, we now graduate to the level where we can begin to really pay attention to the I Am presence. most of us, prior to this initial purification, the I Am presence is too subtle for us to pay attention to. We're too absorbed in thought. Although we call thoughts formless, the truth is thoughts are like concrete compared to the I Am presence. It's so subtle. So once we've gotten a lot of the wrong-minded thoughts out of the way, you know, we've kind of cleared some space, so to speak, that we can start to look for and sense the I Am presence. Usually, initially, in very small, short glimpses with a long time in between before we glimpse it again. But with practices like awareness, watching awareness, and practices like the games that I've introduced through the Rupert Spira teaching, and practices like Bentinho's, you know, stop thinking for 2 to 5 seconds, and just notice that you exist. Through practices like that, we get the flavor or the feeling of the I Am presence more and more. And as we get the scent, I use flavor, feeling, and scent, because really it's none of those things. But as we get the scent, the awareness of, that's a good word, as we get the awareness of the I Am presence more, we can now begin to really practice what is called awareness, watching, awareness, meditation. But we're practicing it still, not at the advanced level. Let's say we're in junior high school now. We're in middle school. We're practicing it at the middle school level. And so we're setting an awareness, watching awareness, but what we're really learning to pay attention to is the I Am presence. You'll remember from Michael Lankford's book, The Eternal Means to Eternal Bliss, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, he says that I can't remember if he uses the word awareness or I Am presence. I think he probably uses the word awareness or consciousness. But he says that as you focus on awareness, that is the doorway to infinite awareness, right? So when you're practicing awareness, watching awareness at our level, those of us who have not awakened to consciousness, when you're practicing at our level, we're actually not focused on infinite awareness. We can't see that far back yet. We're learning to become aware of consciousness. We're learning to become aware of the second principle of God, the I Am presence, and we're focusing on that. And that's as far back as we can go right now, so that's what we do, right? You could say the door to infinite awareness is still kind of out of reach to us at this point. But we focus on the I Am presence, focus on consciousness, focus on, you know, we can call it awareness, to the best of our ability, and that leads to an awakening to the second principle of God. And you know when you've awakened to the second principle of God because you experience genuine, not intellectual, oneness. Right? You experience everything as consciousness, not the different forms it appears to be. So it's a dramatically different way of perceiving. And again, A Course in Miracles calls it true perception. But it's a dramatically different way of perceiving. See, we're still in perception. But it's still quite dramatic from the way you perceived before. And that's why people call it an awakening. But now you're in high school. You don't have your diploma yet. You're in high school now. And so now, a whole nother level of awareness, watching awareness opens up. And this is where you can begin to go into samadhi. This is where you can begin to close your eyes and go into awareness, watching awareness, without awareness of the world, without awareness of the body. Because now that you've woken up to the level of consciousness, that next level, infinite awareness, that door's opening. And you're able to go in and be in pure awareness without any outward awareness at all as practice at this point. And what we're told is that, you know, you go into it, but you return. And you go into it, but you return. And, you know, I read this from Bernadette Roberts a couple weeks ago. What you're really doing is preparing yourself to go into it and not return. Right? So now you're practicing, we'll call it awareness, watching awareness with capital A's. Right? It's a different experience than it was at the lower level. But it's the same practice. And so as you learn to abide in pure awareness, and somehow you become readied, that this is where we're told God takes the last step. At some point, the step is taken where you are moved from knowing yourself as consciousness back to the first principle of God, to pure awareness, which means there's no perception. There's no world. There's no I, no self. And that's the final awakening. That's what is called fully enlightened. And again, it's done through discrimination. First, you discriminate right mind from wrong mind. Then you discriminate witness from object. Right? You're not watching. You're ignoring thoughts and paying attention to the I am presence. You're discriminating between witness and object. Then you discriminate from between, at this level, we'll call it real and unreal. Because even consciousness, remember, is unreal. Even the real world is still a dream. And when you go into that samadhi or into that awareness, watching awareness meditation, you're abiding with the real. So you're beginning to discriminate between real and unreal at this level in high school. And then God gives you your diploma. And you awaken as a final awakening to pure awareness. So discrimination is the way. So let's go back to this answer. What is pure mind and what is impure mind? When the indefinable power of Brahman separates itself from Brahman and in union with the reflection of consciousness assumes various forms, it is called impure mind. So again, the second, the third, and the fourth principles of God are impure mind, which means they're not the purity of the absolute. They're something else, right? When it becomes free of the reflection of consciousness through discrimination, it is called the pure mind. Its state of union with the Brahman is its apprehension of Brahman. So I'm going to pull out the dictionary again and look up apprehension. Because now we're really talking about a level that's beyond perception. So I'm sure Raman is just using the best word he can. Yeah, just understanding or grasp, you know, a mental, and it's not really mental at this point, but understanding. Understanding is the word he means, understanding. So, you know, and again, now we're getting beyond anything we can understand. So all words to a point aren't going to be good words. Because when we say understanding, we think mental understanding, and this is way beyond mental. You no longer have awareness of, right? Because you're in pure awareness again. But what he's really saying is, in that state of union with pure awareness, you know yourself as pure awareness. You apprehend yourself. But he's not saying see yourself because you aren't an object. Very, you know, there's no way, I got to say this, there's just no way we can understand this except to take the journey on our own. And when we get into the third year of gentle healing, we're going to go a lot deeper into looking at teachings that really talk about this level of awakening. Because we'll be in high school. So, its state of union with Brahman is its apprehension of Brahman. Right? You know yourself as that in a way that we can't understand knowing. The energy which is accompanied by the reflection of consciousness is called impure mind. The energy which is accompanied by the reflection of consciousness is called impure mind. That energy, you can feel that energy if you just close your eyes for a moment and feel your body, not with your hands, with your mind. People often call it sensations. And the longer you sit with your eyes closed, feeling your body, you know, Eckhart Tolle calls it the inner body. You're feeling one level of that energy of manifestation. You know, if your heart begins to open and you feel this fluttering in your heart, that's the energy of manifestation. And he's saying all of this energy is still impure mind, which of course it is. You know, it's not the absolute. Right? It's consciousness. The energy which is accompanied by the reflection of consciousness is called the impure mind. And its state of separation from Brahman is its non-apprehension of Brahman, which means as long as we experience ourselves in the manifest world, if that is how you experience yourself, in other words, you're not awake to consciousness, right? You're not awake to consciousness. As long as you experience yourself in the manifest world, you have no experience of pure awareness. You know, so whatever we might call God here, say, I felt God today in my meditation. At best, it was the I am presence. It might have been pure imagination. It might have been the energy of consciousness, the feelings in the body. But at this level, at the fourth principle of God, there isn't a direct line to the first principle of God. We have to pass through the awakening to consciousness. Right? So what we are experiencing in awareness, watching awareness, is consciousness, and we're learning to focus on consciousness. Once we awaken to consciousness, we have access to pure awareness, and we'll begin focusing on that. So we have a ways to go, you could say, but we have the right practices. We're on the right path. And I'm out of time, so I'm going to go. Bye.